Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the virtual fireside chat with Rent-A-Center. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode, and we will open up the floor for your questions and comments after the presentation. It is now my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, John Baugh. Sir, the floor is yours.
Thank you, and apologize for the tardy start here. We had some technical issues. So, what we're going to do is going to have Mitch Fadel, CEO of Rent-A-Center, and Maureen Short, the CFO, make some opening comments. I've got a handful of questions I'm going to ask that I think will be helpful, and then we will ask the operator or open the call for questions. So apologize for the delay, but Mitch, if you could kick us off, that would be great. Thank you.
I will, John, and thanks a lot. Good morning, everyone, or afternoon, depending where you are. We appreciate your time for the next hour, and hopefully it'll be informative for everybody. And we enjoy doing this, and we love the business we're in, which is the Rent-A-Center business. And I'll start with that update. We really, for those of you who don't know, we really have two significant segments that we operate. One is the rent-owned business, the Rent-A-Center business. It's about 2,300 stores. It's about 2,000 corporate-owned and about 300 franchised. Traditional brick-and-mortar operation with a fast-growing e-com segment to it. Our 2,300 stores handle the final mile for our e-com, though, so we don't have separate infrastructure for that. That's one segment, and then I'll talk about our retail partner business in a second. So that segment, today's update on that segment, is certainly more positive than traditional retail. The vast majority of our stores are still open. We're the only area we are shut down from operating in is Puerto Rico, where we are not operating as an essential business there. But in the United States, and that's about 30 stores, by the way, in the United States, we are operating virtually everywhere, serving our customer everywhere, even with all the shutdown orders, because we're considered an essential business. And the reason we're considered an essential business is the products we carry. We've got a wide mix of products, but specifically the refrigerators, the freezers that people need, especially cash and credit constrained customers that we deal with. What are they going to do if they go spend the $200 they have at the grocery store and then the refrigerator dies and the food's starting to spoil? So refrigerators, freezers, stoves, laundry, and laptops, so people can keep their job by working from home. So we have essential products that we rent, and we're serving the customer still everywhere. Now, there are some stores where we're following local and statewide and federal rules on this and orders that govern us. So there's a few places where we do have the showroom closed and we're servicing our customer only through telephone orders or web orders, internet orders, the e-com part of it, doing curbside, doing threshold deliveries or doorstep deliveries and so forth. So I don't want to say it's business as usual, but it's pretty close. We do have some showrooms closed, but the majority of stores have the showrooms open. And all stores, we're servicing the customer throughout the United States through that essential business exemptions and so forth, and glad to do it. We're here for the customer. They need all our products, but specifically those essential items. And again, we're operating almost at 100% of our stores, with the exception of Puerto Rico and some showroom closures that are still operating out of the back anyhow. So that's the update on the brick and mortar today. Our retail partner business is the second significant segment that we operate. And we've got about 1,000 locations where we staff the retail partner store to do a transaction under the brand Preferred Lease, and close to 3,000 where we do it virtually. Now, there's been a lot more closures on the retail side. A lot of our business is with furniture stores, and so nowhere do they have that essential exemption, those essential exemption waivers. So there's been more closures over there than there has been on our Rent-A-Center side. So the good news there is a couple of things. One, it's a portfolio business, so we've got a long tail portfolio to collect on through our call center. You know, we don't get shut down totally like a retailer does because we've got a recurring revenue stream and contracts to collect on. So we've got a long tail to that goes well beyond any prediction on how long the pandemic will last. And then we have, it's extremely variable from a cost standpoint in that the 1,000 locations that are staffed, if any of those retailers close, then we furloughed the employees and we save the labor too. And actually in the short term, if you knock off the labor in those staff stores and you're collecting your accounts and you're not buying any new inventory because the retailer's closed, then you have actually a benefit to cash in the short term. So it's a good time to be in a recurring revenue nature type of business at both Rent-A-Center and Preferred Lease with nice long tails to collect on the Preferred Lease side. The Rent-A-Center side, same thing, just we're still doing a lot of business on the Rent-A-Center side as well. So good stuff there as far as being able to outlast this. I'll move on to what happens at the end of this, and that's actually – you know, we're actually even more excited about that. We're glad we're in the type of business we're in today with the recurring revenue stream in this environment versus street retail. But on the back end of this, we're even more excited because there's going to be a lot of opportunity. The stimulus, you know, really goes in the pockets of our customers. We've proven in the past to be very recession resilient for a couple of reasons. You know, where people think our collections are going to crater, remember, this is a lease and not a sale. The customer doesn't take ownership until the end, until they exercise one of their purchase options. So even the customer's under pressure. We don't have to try to collect money out of someone who doesn't have it. All we have to do is pick up the merchandise and rent it to somebody else. And they say, yeah, well, you got to have the demand to rent it to somebody else. Well, coming out of this, there'll be plenty of demand. We will see, we're already seeing it, we will see prime lenders tighten up, subprime lenders tighten up, pushing more into the lease-to-own funnel. So what we've seen in past recessions, and obviously none of us have seen the times we're living in today, but based on our experience and my experience having done this since 1983, with the exception of 2.5 years where I left the company and worked through many different recessions, including 2008, the demand as the prime and subprime lenders move up, the demand increases at the top of the funnel for us and more than makes up for anything that we could lose at the bottom of the funnel. And so, you know, the short story is we've got a recurring revenue stream to make it through this. We don't have liquidity concerns. And we got a great balance sheet. We did borrow on our revolver just to get the money in-house versus not at an abundance of caution. And we feel good about where we are and because of the nature of our business. And we'll feel really good coming out of this about the opportunity to serve even more customers. So with that, I'll see Maureen, if you want to add anything to that before John starts with his questions.
The only thing I would add is I know everyone is concerned in general about liquidity, and as we said in our press release, we feel comfortable that we're going to be able to continue to serve our customers with the liquidity that we have. There's also some cash flow benefits from demand slowing down if we are to see that, which can be helpful in the near term. I'm sure we'll get into more details on the call, but you know, we're not at risk of having liquidity concerns.
Great. Thank you for that, Mitch and Maureen. Maybe I'll start it off and just ask you perhaps, Maureen, to walk through a few numbers on liquidity. What is your liquidity position? And maybe also what's your kind of cash obligations are for the next 12 months, and then roll into your comment you just made about the nature of the business and if demand weakens and the fact you don't have to write new leases, how that impacts your cash flow. So sort of three questions: total liquidity, what's your cash obligation, say, in the next 12 months, and then walk us through the dynamics of how working capital changes if lease demand shrinks in both sides of the business. Thank you. You there?
Maureen, did we lose?
Sorry about that. I was talking on mute.
Sorry about that.
So for to answer the question about the balance sheet and liquidity, we've got a $300 million ABL credit facility that has a pretty long maturity of 2024 and a Term Loan B that's $200 million that expires in 26. So we have a long runway with our existing facility. We have borrowed on that revolver $118 million as a precautionary measure to ensure that we had the available cash. We had previously borrowed about $45 million at the end of the fourth quarter. So we now have a balance of $163 million on that $300 million revolver. And we didn't necessarily need that cash, so it's sitting on the balance sheet at this point, just in case we do need additional liquidity going forward, but we didn't need it as of right now. As I talked about, there'll be some working capital benefits. So some of our cash outflows that we'll have are just the typical expenses with labor, which we've done some reductions, rent expense, which we're looking at talking to our landlords and try to reduce rent expense where we can. But inventory purchases is typically a significant cash outflow for the business. And as demand declines, as we talked about, it reduces that investment that we make by buying inventory, putting it out on rent for the customer, and then generating cash flow over time with small payments, which is what the customer pays. So as an example, on the preferred lease side where Mitch talked about has been more impacted than the brick and mortar business, when a customer signs a new rental contract, we buy the merchandise from the retailer at a cost of, on average, around $1,000. And then we collect about $150 or $180 per month, whatever the case may be, from the customer. So for the first few months, we're in a negative cash position on that transaction. So if a retail partner closes and we can't write new agreements or just demand slows in general, our cash outflow reduces. So previously coming into the year, we were planning to have a working capital investment because of the growth that we assumed on the virtual side, as well as, you know, continuing to generate demand in the business. So again, if demand slows, then that actually helps the business from a cash flow perspective in the near term. It'll negatively impact it in the longer term because we'll have a lower revenue stream, but in the near term, it helps cash. So, and we were trending ahead of expectations in January and February. The first quarter is a strong cash position for us because with tax refund season, there's a lot of payouts. And so we started into this whole coronavirus epidemic or pandemic in a strong cash position. We had paid down a lot of debt last year. Our leverage ratio at the end of last quarter was 0.7 times. So there's a lot of benefits here as far as the cash position. Some of the other outflows are things like cash taxes, which we're trying to take advantage of any of the changes with the stimulus plan that the government's rolled out. So our cash taxes will also be lower for the year. So those are the big buckets as far as spend and what we're doing to try to make sure that we have enough liquidity.
Super. And to the extent you can, comment on what you've seen in the last week or 10 days or whichever period of time when we really started to see things slip. In terms of perhaps, you know, new lease take up or payments or lack thereof from your customers, and, you know, the pickups that would occur, I guess, if you couldn't collect payment, whether any of those have changed meaningfully. And I understand it's early innings, but it might be helpful to get a little insight of what you've seen immediately.
Yeah, John, I'll take that to start with it. On the Rent-A-Center side, as I mentioned earlier, the demand of those essential products like refrigerators and laptops, let's say, has made up for any lack of demand for all the other reasons. So our demand is stronger in certain categories, and again, making up for any other weakness. So there hasn't been much of an impact on the Rent-A-Center side. Certainly on the Preferred Lease side, there's more impact with more of those stores being closed. Again, we're able to take the labor out of the stores and collect out of our call center for those that we have staff. So it actually will be an increase to cash flow for a while. As on the Preferred Lease side, as Maureen said, down the road you have a smaller portfolio as people pay out, you know, and then you just build it back up. And we just think we'll have a tremendous opportunity to build it back up when we come out of this for all the reasons I said earlier, stimulus going to our customer. And then a lot of people, your question on returns and so forth, we have not seen any. It's not like more people are returning product. They need the product more than ever in their home. If you think about your home, and most people are stuck in their home today, you know, you don't get rid of something out of your home. You're probably just adding to it, if anything. So good time to be in the household durable goods product categories like we are. So returns have not spiked. You know, what have we seen spike in the country? We've seen unemployment spike. Of course, 2 points to make on that, the impact of that in our business. One is, you know, our customer is the one who's going to be whole based on the federal subsidies to the states. You know, who's going to take a cut when they go on unemployment? It's not people at the income range of our customers because of those federal subsidies. So that's number one. They're going to have the same similar income levels, and it's not like all of our customers are unemployed either. It's still a smaller percentage for us. But you know, so we take comfort in the fact that they'll still be made whole. Number one. Number two, and most people don't know this, and this is really an important point. We got a program in our stores and in the Preferred Lease side. Called Benefits Plus. It's a club program. It's benefits to the customer. They pay a few dollars a week for it. You've seen it before. It includes some of the warranty stuff like replacement product. Some's included in the rental payment, but they get extra benefits by having this $3 a week add-on product. You know, we make good margin on it. It's underwritten by Aon. One of the products within this club is unemployment insurance. And about 75% of our Rent-A-Center customers have this feature, have this benefit, which is after they're unemployed for 15 days or more, we help them put a claim in with Aon, and they will pay their rental payments direct to us up to $1,000 in the aggregate for each customer. So to the extent we have a lot of people going on unemployment, even people being made whole has nothing to do with how much they're going to get on unemployment. It's just that they're on unemployment. Aon will pay the rental payments up to, you know, in the aggregate of $1,000, and that's 75% of our customers. You know, the other 25% we'll work with. We can wait a week or two until they get their unemployment and so forth because we want to keep their revenue stream. And so we haven't seen the increase in returns. We would not expect to see the increase in returns for the reasons I just stated, which is primarily the unemployment being higher than normal, number one. Number two, and more importantly, 75% of our customers have this unemployment insurance feature backed by Aon. So, you know, if anything, it probably will add some demand, especially as retail starts opening back up on the Preferred Lease side. But on the Rent-A-Center side, if anything, as these checks come out, even before we're out of the pandemic, it probably helps demand more than anything else.
And Mitch, on that, that's an interesting feature. Have you checked with Aon, and are they they're not going to declare force majeure and deny these claims when they come in?
No, we've been talking to them. We actually have been talking to them. They've been very, very helpful. It's a subsidiary of Aon, so a smaller part of a big monster like Aon. Probably monster's not the right word to use there, but anyhow, a huge conglomerate like Aon. We're not in all that bureaucracy. It's a small subsidiary backed by, that Aon owns. So we know the people real well. We've done business with them for a long time. What we've worked on the last few days is how to make the requirements, the paperwork, a little easier, because we're going to have more claims than we normally do. And they've been, we really don't need that, so let's skip that, that kind of thing. They've been very helpful to try to expedite, rather than get in the way. So, no, they're a great partner, and we won't have any problem with that.
Okay, super. And then perhaps you could explain, I find with many investors, the assumption as we enter a dark period like this, that your, quote, losses are going to spike dramatically. Perhaps you could just walk us through what losses are for you, first and foremost, and how the security of what you do is very different from a subprime lender who is making a loan.
Yeah, good question. On the Rent-A-Center side, the losses run about 4%. And the way we calculate losses, it's the cost, the remaining value of the product. When we buy product and rent it to someone, it depreciates over the life of the agreement. So on average, 16 months, it depreciates. And say after 8 months they stopped paying us and we couldn't find them and we took a charge off, that's the remaining value of the product. In my example, it'd be about half of the cost. If we spent $400 on the laptop, let's say, and they paid us halfway through, we've probably depreciated it halfway then, so we'd owe about $200. Not, we wouldn't owe anybody $200, but there'd be $200 left on our books, and that $200 would be a loss. That would be the charge-off against revenue. And that runs about 4%. So as you can see in that, just the way I described it, it's not even a cash loss if those go up. That product was bought a long time ago. So it's a paper loss. And why does it not skyrocket? Why have we not seen it even go up back in 2008? And I realize this isn't 2008. We've never lived through anything like this. But why doesn't it go up during tough times? And why don't we expect it to go up? Certainly not significantly go up. It could go up a little bit, but certainly not materially go up. Why wouldn't we expect it to? Well, the customer doesn't own the product. We're not trying to collect cash. If the customer cannot afford it, even though unemployment's for 4 or 5 months going to be 100% of what they've been making, even though we've got the unemployment insurance, even though stimulus and all that, if they can't afford it or just don't want it anymore, they return it and we rent it to somebody else. So it's our collateral sitting in the customer's house, not theirs. So we pick it up and rent somebody else. So then you say, well, okay, so your losses won't spike like traditional subprime, but you're cutting off the revenue stream if you have more returns. And that's absolutely true. If we had more returns, that would. But we also have more demand coming out of this to re-rent that to somebody else. And I don't even expect more returns because people need the stuff that's in their home. But in the worst case, if we had more returns, it's not a spike in losses. It gives us product to rent to somebody else that we don't have to go buy more new product on. It actually is a benefit to cash flow if you get more returns. We don't want more returns because it hits revenue later. But more returns on the front side for a month or two actually help cash flow because you don't have to buy as much product because you've got the return product to rent to somebody else. So I think the biggest thing missed, John, in your question is, when people lump us in with subprime, is that we don't have to collect money out of someone who doesn't have it. That's not our transaction. Our transaction is a lease. Equity doesn't transfer till the end, and therefore losses don't spike during these types of times.
Okay. And I think you made an important point there that even in that case where an item is, say, stolen or somebody just takes it without paying, you've already incurred the cash outflow and the inventory up front, and it's a book loss and not a cash loss. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people appreciate or understand. You mentioned, Mitch, that you're largely operational, at least on the store side. Even stores that are closed, you're operational. Maybe you could talk to us quickly about how you collect money normally and how you're collecting money today, particularly for those stores, few, that are physically closed, and how you're operating in the small percentage of stores that are physically closed, to give us some comfort around, you know, you're close to normal in terms of operating your store business.
Well, first of all, on a couple of comments, on the preferred lease side, the retail partner side, about 75% of our customers are on auto pay through their bank account. So that's a little bit different customer, and you know, three-quarters of them set up on auto pay. And in the brick-and-mortar side, the Rent-A-Center side, it's not near that much set up on auto pay. It's more like 25% on auto pay, and the rest pay week to week. Not that many in cash. It's about 25% auto pay, another 50% or so pay with credit, or they just like to make their payments when they want to make them. They call with a payment, or they go online to make a payment, so they can call the store to make the payment. They can go online to make the payment and so forth, and that covers, between auto pay and weekly payments through online, it covers about 75% of the payments on the Rent-A-Center side as well. And then you got the smaller segment that pays in cash, and they normally come to the store to pay in cash. What we would do now in the stores where we've got a closed showroom, I think I mentioned this earlier, they would actually call the number, which is the store phone number, and someone would take the payment curbside using precautions and so forth, gloves and the like. We've got all that kind of stuff set up as you would. I won't go through all those details because I think we all know what those are by now. And we would do a safe cash transaction curbside, and basically in front of the store. So they can still pay in cash. The only place we're struggling to get cash payments is in Puerto Rico, because we can't do curbside down there. We're trying to figure that out. We've got a couple of cash payment things being in the works. Hopefully they'll be set up in the next couple of days, or not quite yet, you know, where you can make cash payments like with Venmo and Pay Near Me and a few of those. So we're working on those, and they're close to being ready to help us in Puerto Rico, but that's the only place that the payment stream, cash payments, is a problem, is in about 30 stores in Puerto Rico. Otherwise, we could take cash payments still. And then but most of our customers still pay with a card, either online or over the phone.
Okay. And then I do want to open up for questions, so just one more for the time being from me, which is, I guess, on the subject of the essential, non-essential. Florida yesterday finally caved into the pressure and is going to a stay-at-home model. But does that change how you're operating, for example, in Florida, yes or no? And what's the likelihood, with everything that's gone down, and maybe you could share, you know, New York, for example, what you're doing where the virus is acute. What comfort can we take that just still be essentially operational as we get these rolling shutdowns by state?
Well, even in the worst place in the country, in New York, we're doing business with a closed showroom, as I described earlier. And in Florida, Miami, Dade County, we're doing business with a closed showroom. Everywhere else is open as usual, but certain restrictions, like down in Miami-Dade County, they said, hey, we know you're essential, we agree you're essential, we need you to service the customers with these products, but close your showroom and just do it over the phone. And we show them that we're doing, you know, doorstep deliveries, not going in customers' homes. We show them the safety precautions we're taking with gloves and sanitizer and wiping down product and so forth. And so I think that and again, even having said all that, it's the minority of the stores that are operating in with a closed showroom environment. But I think and those stores have a lot of demand over the internet or over the phone. So You know, we haven't seen any push to say, you know, if you think about the products, it's when you think about essential, and you just think about refrigerators, and you think about laptops, you know, for working from home, those are essential items. And as long as we do it in a safe way, and in some cases we have to do it with a closed showroom, then we'll do it. So we have a lot of comfort that it'll continue that way. Could the closed showrooms go from a small number to a little bit bigger number? Yeah, I guess it could, but you know, that's probably the worst case scenario, just that number goes up a little bit on the closed showrooms. But even in Florida last night, nothing, that order didn't change any closed showrooms. We were already on closed showroom in Miami-Dade based on their local order. So the Florida order, as our legal team reads through it, doesn't change anything. And what we do with these, we get the order, and then we arm the stores with the order, a letter, because you'll get different people trying to enforce that order coming in the store, and sometimes they don't really know what the order exactly says. So we have the order in the store, whether it's the state order or the local order, for the employees to show. First of all, we want to show our employees why we're staying open, that we're not going against any ordinances or orders. And then we show anybody who comes in to enforce it, even a customer, we'll show them this is why we're still operating. And by the way, if we have an employee that doesn't want to come to work for understandable reasons, and we would all understand why somebody might be a little not want to come go to their job, we have a temporary leave opportunity for the employees, and they can take it any time. We've only had a couple hundred people in the country out of about 13,000 take us up on that. Now there's been others we had to furlough if the store is on a closed showroom or the preferred lease side, some stores closed and so forth. So we've had to, but voluntarily there hasn't been that many people say, oh yeah, I don't want to come to work. But that is an option for our employees where we would cover their insurance and let them go take unemployment. And if they're more comfortable doing that, fine. And then come back when this thing's over, and we'll cover their insurance in the meantime. So we believe we're doing the right thing for our employees and trying to stay there to serve our customers who need our products during this tough time.
Okay. Operator, if you could provide instructions as to how to ask a question, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is now open for questions. If you have any questions or comments, please press star 1 on your phone at this time. We ask that while posing your question, you please pick up your handset if listening on speakerphone to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. Your first question is coming from Barry Hames. Barry, please announce your affiliation, then pose your question.
Sage Asset Management. Thanks, everyone, for doing the call. I had two questions. One, I get the logic of why things held up pretty well in the 2008-2009 period. But just in the last couple, 3 weeks, have you seen any change, uptick in missed payments or not seeing that at all yet? And then the second question is really more of a long-term question. As we go through this challenging period and you think about the competitive landscape, what percent of the market is in relatively big companies like you guys and Aaron's versus what percent is mom and pops? And do you think the financial stress might cause consolidation where, you know, some of these mom and pops go out of business and, you know, the big guys end up with more market share? So love your thoughts on those too. Thanks.
Sure, Barry. On the missed payments, you know, certainly haven't seen anything significant. I wouldn't tell you there's not a slight uptick in these uncertain times. People are waiting, you know, on unemployment for the first check, or for us, they have to be unemployed 15 days for this Aon unemployment benefit to kick in and so forth. So certainly nothing material, nothing that scares us. Are payments coming in a bit slower? Yes. I mean, you wouldn't believe me if I told you they weren't anyhow. And they're coming in a bit slower, but certainly nothing we haven't seen before. You get a little bit of an uptick, before people start paying. Of course, yesterday was the first of the month. We saw a lot of payments come in because a lot of people get their income on the first. So yesterday was a large uptick like we would expect to see. So a little bit higher, but nothing that scares us, to answer your question. And as far as the mom and pops, I think, you know, on the Rent-A-Center side, in the brick and mortar side, there's not all that many stores outside of us and Aaron's. And you know, I don't see the disruption, honestly, on the, because we can operate as an essential business, I don't see the disruption being so high on the Rent-A-Center brick and mortar side that it would actually put some with a lesser balance sheet out of business, honestly. Now on the preferred lease side, there's more competition over there, and there's some small startup companies that have just gotten going, and I could see a bit of a thinning out on the preferred lease side that we compete with. There's some awful good companies out there, big companies with good balance sheets that we compete with too, that I wouldn't expect to have any problem. But there's a few smaller ones that it wouldn't surprise me if they struggled and there was a little less competition on the retail partner side coming out of this.
Great. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Barry.
Your next question is coming from Nate Henderson. Please announce your affiliations and pose your question.
Hi, guys. Loomis Sales. Thanks for the time. I have two questions as well. The first one, Maureen, you mentioned some of the tax benefits that you might be able to get from the fiscal stimulus. And maybe you could talk about that in relation to, I think you guys have benefited the past couple of years from some, you know, the tax laws. I see that your deferred tax liability balance is built up in the balance sheet. Talk about how that might flow through to cash taxes. And the second question is, as you guys talked about, it's a portfolio business. So in the near term, that is hurt by that. But if demand does soften significantly and the portfolio is lower later this year, can you talk about how you think about the fixed cost deleverage in both sides of your business? Thank you.
The first part of your question about the tax benefits, there's a number of items that we're looking at in the stimulus package, including things like the payroll tax deferral. There's an NOL carryback where we can, there's an expansion of the carryback rules. So there's a couple of scenarios that could benefit us this year and result in lower cash taxes that we would pay. And then there's business interest expense limitation benefits that we're looking at. So we're evaluating a number of items. It's a lot to take in, but we've got numerous people looking at what benefits we can take advantage of. And then if there is a decrease in profits from the coronavirus, that would help reduce our cash taxes as well. And then the second part of your question about fixed cost, I'll speak to that a little bit. I touched on a couple of items that we've looked at. Obviously, if revenue declines, we want to make sure we do whatever we can to try to reduce our costs to maintain an optimal level of EBITDA margin as we go forward. So we've done some furlough with our employees as we've closed our showrooms. We've transferred some of the collections activities over to our centralized call centers, which is a good way to transfer a fixed cost to a variable cost and have a highly productive team in our call center that we acquired with Merchants Preferred, and they do a great job, and they've been able to quickly pivot and make some great changes to enable us to reduce some of our fixed labor costs. And then there's a number of other non-essential expenses that we're looking at, trying to scrutinize and postpone different capital investments or other operating expenses that we feel we could postpone without significantly impacting the business. So we're doing what we can to try to make sure that we maximize our profitability and our cash flow during these uncertain times, but also looking at ways to be able to take advantage of the opportunity as we come out of this, because we do feel like in the recessionary type of environments that we can benefit either from competitors that close or just having a strong balance sheet to be able to make investments and continue to add additional retail partners. There's, you know, we're still actively talking to retail partners to try to make sure that we've got the demand funnel being filled so that when we come out of this, we'll be geared up to capture the opportunity.
And did you have any comments on the deferred tax liability if there's a scenario where that becomes a cash liability?
The impact that we could see there is as inventory purchases reduce with the demand decline, there could be less of an advantage as far as the bonus tax depreciation that we take advantage of. But the overall cash benefit from lower inventory purchases would likely offset the negative cash impact from paying, not taking advantage or being able to take advantage of the same bonus depreciation from a deferred tax liability, because it's a portion of the inventory purchases that we're able to accelerate depreciation on, which helps our cash taxes, but buying less inventory would be the full cost of the inventory.
I think the only thing I would add to your answer on the fixed costs, Maureen, is we're talking about the demand coming out of this, and even the demand today. Keep in mind, I think everybody knows what's happening in the e-com world as far as, some of those companies are skyrocketing, and our preferred lease option is also available for e-com partners and that are only selling online, and their business is booming in most cases. So, we're talking to retailers about how we add on the e-com site. We already have some anyhow in our normal course of business, but brick and mortar could be closed, but we still have opportunity on the e-com side. And then the only other thing I'd add on the fixed cost side, we don't have that many fixed costs. We were talking to John about this yesterday. We don't have that many fixed costs. We are making our labor in the stores much more variable. Of course, real estate leases are fixed costs, and I think Maureen mentioned it earlier. That's something else we'll look at. And as we need to, it's an opportunity to renegotiate leases and so forth, and we'll take advantage of that as well.
Your next question is coming from Abby Jane. Please announce your affiliation, then pose your question.
Hi, Nantahala Capital. And my question is just on the operations side, in terms of repossessing items, if somebody kind of misses a payment, are you still able to kind of get to people's houses and kind of take back your inventory?
We are. There's a couple of states where we're not doing it. We're not doing that in New York City, for instance, right now, unless a customer requests it. And keep in mind, Abby Jean, the majority of our returns are customer requests. I think there's a vision that, we've got these big collectors out there knocking on the door saying, hey, I need my product back when somebody doesn't pay. Most of this is done over the phone, and you arrange a time to pick up. And in certain places, we're getting the customer to put it at their doorstep so we don't have to go into the house and so forth. But most of it is done agreeing that, if you can't afford it anymore, you don't want it anymore, here's how we do the return. Keep in mind the customer that can't afford it anymore, if they give it back to us, they can come back and pick up where they left off at any time, something we call lifetime reinstatement for that customer. So there's a lot of reasons for it to be done just through a requested pickup by the customer. But as far as some of the harder accounts, which is a small percent of the business, maybe the 5 to 10% of the business that we do have to go out there and knock on the door and talk to the customer about a return, we're still doing that less than we were for obvious reasons, and not at all in a couple of cases, like I believe it's New York City and Massachusetts where we're not doing it at all. So we're still running our business with a tweak here or there, but for the most part, we're running it normal with those few exceptions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
There are no further questions in queue.
Thank you, operator. And again, my apologies for the late start to the call, but appreciate all of those tuning in. I want to thank Maureen and Mitch for their time and agreeing to do this. And please feel free to reach out to me, jabaugh@stiefel.com. If you have any follow-up thoughts or questions. Again, thank you everyone for participating this afternoon.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This does conclude today's conference call. You may disconnect your phone lines at this time and have a wonderful day. Thank you for your participation.